CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black. And a success in space engineering, commercial space, Rocket Lab, Catch a Falling Knife. Bob, a very good evening to you. What is Rocket Lab, and what have they achieved that I doubted for a long time, and forgive me. Good evening to you, Bob.
Good evening, John. Well, Rocket Lab is one of these small sat rocket startups, and they're the longest successful operational rocket company, small sat rocket company. They have a rocket called the Electron rocket. They've launched it now successfully about 26 times over the last 3-4 years. So they're very successful, and they've been making money. But one of the things they started to develop about a year and a half ago was their desire to make their first stage reusable, much like SpaceX. But they weren't going to do it the same way as SpaceX. Instead of vertically landing that first stage, their rocket is a lot smaller than the Falcon 9 rocket, and for a lot of reasons, doing it vertically didn't make sense engineering-wise. So they looked for a different route. And the route they decided to go was, rather than fire the engines as this first stage dropped back to the ground, they would have it release parachutes to slow it down. And so it would be floating down on parachutes relatively slowly, so that once it got close enough to the ground, a helicopter with a trailing cable with a hook at the end could grab the parachute and then carry the first stage back to land and deposit it on the ground very gently. And then they could reuse it. Now, they've done a whole range of different tests up to last year and a half. They've tested the parachute system, and they've been able to recover first stages in the ocean in reasonably good shape. But once again, once you're in salt water, it probably eliminates the use of the thing again. And they have also done drop tests where they have taken a parachute. They've dropped the stage from a short height and the parachutes grabbed it and then lowered it to the ground. So they've tested that part, but they've never done it on an actual launch until this week. This week they were launching 34 satellites, small satellites on an Electron rocket. And they had decided then this launch, they're going to attempt to catch the first stage as it came down. And so I was watching the live stream. You can watch it, too. I've got it up on Behind the Black. But I captured a screen capture just before the parachute was going to catch this first stage. You can see the stage floating towards the ground on the parachute. And you can see the yellow capture cord to the left. And just a few seconds later, they captured it. The helicopter was able to snatch that parachute and can capture it. Now, they did not successfully bring it back to the ground because this was the first time they were doing it, and the helicopter pilot noticed what he called, quote, different load characteristics, unquote, close quote, than he had seen during the previous drop tests above the ground. This is now the first time they're doing it full bore, and he noticed things were not quite the same. And so for safety reasons, he let the stage drop into the ocean at that point, and they've recovered the stage, though they probably won't reuse it. This is not a failure. This is a total success, because now they have demonstrated they can catch these stages. And now that they know what happens when they catch them in the real situation, they can adjust how that helicopter and the parachute function so that later captures will be a good one. If they, with this system, they now will be able to make their rocket as reusable practically as SpaceX's, since they launch much smaller payloads and much smaller satellites, and their rocket is much smaller. Their cost is going to be tiny. Of course, they're not in the same market as SpaceX. SpaceX launches larger satellites, and so these two companies will now not be competing with each other, but will be competing with Rocket Lab will be competing with the other 100+ small sat rocket company startups that are trying to grab its business, and they are in a position now to undercut them if they succeed in doing this job.
Viasat. Suddenly, Bob, we have a villain on the scene. Viasat complaining about Starlink. Viasat is in the same business, but it's complaining to the regulators. Explain, Bob.
This is not the first time Viasat has done this, but Viasat is an internet, is a communication satellite company. It's launched for decades. It's been launching satellites to provide communications for customers. And one of the things it does, for example, is it provides internet Wi-Fi capabilities to airlines, so that, you know, you get on the plane, you can now get, you know, while you're on the flight, you can surf the web. And Viasat provides that to a bunch of airlines like United. Well, Starlink is coming along, and Starlink provides a better service than Viasat can, because Viasat satellites are much in much higher orbits, and so forth. There's a lot of time delay when you do the communications on the ground, and Starlink doesn't have that problem. And so Viasat has twice, once before, tried to get the FCC to block Starlink for regulatory reasons, and that was rejected. But they sent out another letter this week to the FCC, once again demanding that the FCC block the deployment of SpaceX's full 30,000 Starlink satellite constellation. And the reason that Viasat wants this blocked is because they say Starlink's the large satellite constellation, quote, would have significant aesthetic, scientific, social, and cultural and health effects on the human environment in space, on Earth. It's ridiculous. The only thing that the Starlink constellation might affect on the ground is astronomy, ground-based telescopes. But I don't have any sympathy for the astronomers, because they should have decades ago shifted from building ground-based telescopes to putting them in orbit, where they not only would avoid the problem of satellites, but they would also get rid of the atmosphere as a blurring, smearing influence on their vision. So I don't have much sympathy on astronomers here, no matter how much they complain. I have less sympathy for Viasat, because rather than compete, they're trying to use the government to act as a biased referee to throw out their competitor, and that's pretty vile, in my opinion, John.
I agree, Bob, but you know, every melodrama needs a villain, and suddenly we have one running to Big Brother to shut down Starlink. Bob, you can't make this stuff up. So let's go to the administrator of NASA, Bill Nelson, a longtime senator from Florida. Once upon a time, he was a go-to man in the U.S. Senate. He's a senior figure for NASA's budget, but he's had a change of mind. How so, Bob?
Well, it's interesting. When he was a senator from Florida, he was one of the big supporters of big space companies like Boeing and Lockheed Martin, making sure they got big, big, big contracts. And he made sure he wanted them to get the contracts that were written cost plus. What cost plus is that any cost increases or delays in the contract, the federal government and NASA would pick up the cost plus give the company 10%, which of course encourages the companies like Lockheed and Boeing to stretch out development and have cost overruns, because every cost overrun or delay in development brings them more money. The government has to pick it up. And Nelson was a big supporter of that for decades. Well, he's now NASA's administrator at the Biden administration, and he had testimony this week before a subcommittee of the Senate Appropriations Committee, in which he was telling his former colleagues, shockingly, that he considers cost-plus contracts, quote, a plague on NASA, close quote, that he wants all future contracts at NASA to be fixed price. That means the companies only get a fixed amount of money, and they only get it when they complete milestones. And if there's any overruns or time delays, the company has to pick up the difference. And so this is an astonishing change for Nelson. What it to me that signifies two important things, John, very important. One, the Biden administration, and Nelson's confirming this now, the Biden administration is going to continue and even accelerate the policies that the Trump administration started, which was to transfer all space effort from NASA and the government to the private sector. This is basically following the recommendations I put forth in my 2017 policy paper, Capitalism in Space, that basically NASA shall be the customer. It won't build anything. It will buy what it needs from the private sector, and it'll be a competing private sector that will own what it builds so it can sell it to others as well. So that's one thing. The Biden administration is not doing what past new administrations would do, which would be to dump previous policies and come up with their own. They're continuing that policy. That is a very bright future for the American private space industry. And the second thing this signifies is that the SLS rocket, its future is now very precarious. Bill Nelson is admitting to that because the SLS contract depends on cost plus contracts. Almost entirely. So any serious failure, Nelson's basically saying he's willing to cut it. He doesn't like it anymore. And this means that further launches are on a very thin political thread, and any failures will make that thread far, far thinner. SLS is really facing its end, John. There's no doubt about that.
We learn from NASA learning from commercial space, and now we go to Space Force learning from commercial space. How so, Bob?
Well, this is another demonstration how the Biden administration is continuing the Trump policies for towards private enterprise, but it's not with NASA. This is with the Space Force. The Space Force has awarded 125 small contracts. These contracts are only for $250,000, $250,000. So they're very small developmental contracts to 125 different small companies to develop new technologies for both removing space junk as well as servicing orbiting satellites. Now, these are development contracts. It's going to a lot of different companies, though small, but that means that this is a first phase in a longer-term project to develop at least one or two teams and a few companies in a few years that could do these kind of things in orbit. And so this is once again demonstrating the commitment in the Biden administration to buy what it needs from the private sector in space instead of building it in-house. And that's a very good thing, John.
Dream Chaser, one of my favorite early ideas. When we started talking about this more than a dozen years ago, or something in the early part of this century, Dream Chaser was a great idea, a mini shuttle. Where is it now?
Well, they have a contract with NASA to create this mini shuttle, their first Dream Chaser. They're calling it Tenacity, and that contract is to supply cargo to and from ISS. It's not manned, but it would be a mini shuttle that would go up, provide cargo, and then be able to return cargo safely to the ground on a runway. It's a space plane. It's been under construction. They got that contract to do this back in 2016. And so the development of Dream Chaser has been incredibly slow. I'm actually critical of that. I think they've taken much too long. They had an update including pictures of the construction of the Tenacity. It's moving forward. They hope in February of 23, that's less than a year from now, to do the first flight. And so that's a good sign. I hope it happens. It's taken them much too long, though, to build just one spacecraft, John. It's unfortunate.
And now my favorite story of the moment. Dmitry Rogozin is the head of Roscosmos, the most famous manned space enterprise in the history of mankind. Will be celebrated 10,000 years from now. Manned space, Roscosmos. However, these days, Rogozin has taken to speaking without actually knowing what he's talking about. Most recently, I sent Bob an item I saw where Rogozin said, "That's it. You've violated our understanding. You've sanctioned us. You're refusing to back off sanctions. This having to do with the Ukraine crisis. Therefore, we're leaving the ISS." And I thought, what? What do you mean leaving the ISS? And I sent it to Bob, and now he's going to explain. Bob?
Yeah, that story that appeared over this past week was reported by both Bloomberg and Axios. And both of those stories treated Dmitry Rogozin's statement like it was a news story, like, oh, my God, they're leaving ISS. But your listeners, John, and readers of Behind the Black know that I've been reporting on this now for more than, almost 2 months. And in fact, what Rogozin just said recently was a backing off from that claim of leaving ISS. In middle of March, he said, we're going to leave ISS by the end of the month. Then at the beginning of April, he said, well, we're going to leave in about a year or so. We're in negotiations right now. So in this most recent statement, what he said was, well, we're definitely going to give you a year's notice when we leave. which is meaning we haven't announced the leaving yet. This indicates several things. One, the ignorance of a lot of the mainstream press like Bloomberg and Axios. They're reporting this as if it was news when it wasn't news. And they're missing the real story, which was that actually Rogozin was backing off from his previous position. And the second thing about this is that they didn't understand what the real story is. The real story is twofold. One, the space program of Russia is facing its death. They don't have any cash to finance their own space station, and they have no one else to fly with. China says to work with them, but China's not going to give them any money, and they need the money. And they're not going to be able to work with any of the future private American space stations. No way. So they have no future. So they're going to stay with ISS for as long as they can. That's what I think is going to now happen, John. And we also have to remember that anything Rogozin says is bluster. One should not take it too seriously, no matter what he says.
Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black. We're going to the surface of the sun next. I'm John Bash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.